Jeff, I know you're good, but how in God's name you were able to analyze three approaches while you're in cruise with your family amazes me. Could you go through how you accomplished this?
Well, I didn't. I did it in the comfort of my living room at a reasonable temperature and then got to sit back and say what I came up with. In the cockpit, it would have been a lot more stressful, absolutely. But, you know, this is where actually having digital devices really shines, because I can quickly get that bird's eye view on the tablet. I can see, wow, there are no airports for me to land at and bail out here. The nearest one is Winnemucca, so let me see what I've got there, find out what the weather is there, see what my other options are. And by, you know, a nice tap and click and scroll, I can quickly rule out a bunch of possibilities. Like,
well, that's before your fingers get numb.
Yeah, before my fingers turn numb, which is why I'm going through and trying to find it out right away, right? And to me, the takeaway here is that concept of don't just jump to what is the most obvious item. Like, it's freezing. We got to get down. There's an RNAV approach from the north into Winnemucca. Let me ask for that right now and then brief it. Take a little bit of extra time and be like, okay, that approach, minimums. Are there minimums for that approach? Can I get in? Ooh, that one's right at minimums. All right, what about in the other direction? Oh, that doesn't make any sense. I'd be going a long distance that way. Let me look at something like a VOR approach and see if there is a use there. And in this case, it's a weird situation. But when you have on airport VORs, sometimes you get these really low minimums. And sometimes you get weird obstacles that just bump up RNAV minimums, you know, surprising you. I might not have NOTAMs and everything for this approach, and I might have to go asking for that, or hopefully I packed it on my tablet. But that's where, you know, these kind of devices really shine.
Isn't this a superb example of why we look at options before we ever take off? Because, you know, this was not a dangerous flight as you planned it. But, you know, just based upon the loss of your heater, you know, you were putting yourself in a bit of a squeeze here.
Yeah, there's a surprising number of things that are relying on, you know, something as mundane as heat, right? I mean, you know, Bob brought up, right, like before my fingers freeze, you know, as your hands just get cold in the cockpit, your ability to manipulate things. And if you don't have, you know, if you try and use your iPad with gloves on, you know, that's not going to work. So you're going to be pulling off a glove, pulling out your pocket knife and cutting off, you know, one finger from your glove so that you could sit there and use the iPad.
If you have gloves. And does anyone know whether an iPad has a lower temperature limit?
Right. It's just another good point, you know. Yeah. I doubt it does, but, you know, who knows? What about everyone's breath in the airplane frosting up the inside of the plane? I remember very well flying at 13,000 feet in January in a Dutchess with a dead heater, and we were scraping off the inside of the windscreen, and we couldn't descend into warmer air because we were on top of a layer that had ice, and we were going to keep going where we knew it was clear on the other side. We were stuck there. There was no other good option and no way to reset the heater.
How big a distraction is it to be, you know, bone-chilling cold? I mean, you know, if you're at a football game and you're bone-chilling cold, you know, you're distracted and annoyed and unhappy. But to be there in an airplane, you know, trying to accomplish, you know, a given goal, and your passengers, I don't care how good they are and how good a briefing you've given them, they're going to be distracted. I mean, they're going to contribute to your uneasiness with this situation. Having said that, now we decide to divert. You may have dug yourself a deeper hole with some of the challenges that can be achieved by going into Winnemucca.
Well, yeah, you've challenged yourself with a near minimum approach. Even if you select the right one, Jeff, you've challenged yourself with a near minimum approach in mountainous terrain, and you're not in the best condition because you are distracted with this heater. You really want to get on the ground. You're probably pushing and rushing, which is not the best thing to do when you're at a strange field and especially in mountainous terrain. I just noticed, Jeff, that there's a NOTAM for that particular approach, which moves the minimums up another 100 feet and makes it even a closer approach for you. So I think I'd be inclined to really try for the San Francisco option myself. Or Reno, I mean. Reno. Reno, the closest airport. It's going to be a little bit longer, but it eliminates the risk of that high-altitude mountain area approach.
Further, in addition to the NOTAM, this particular approach chart has the snowflake symbol for the cold weather minimums adjustment, and they start at 22 degrees below Celsius. Now, if you're cruising at 28 below at 10,000 feet, it's conceivable that that may apply. So now you're going to have to do a two-step process of looking elsewhere in the approach chart books to determine how to adjust the minimums in addition to the NOTAM for the cold weather operation. So there's a lot going on here.
Might there be another lesson here, and that is that a decision 15 minutes earlier would have, A, given you a lot more options when you were not quite as inhibited by the cold, and really giving you some better options. But, sometimes we just press. It's just like with icing. It's bound to get better. Or, the optimism in all of us kind of keeps us pressing on when, at the first indication that things weren't going well, maybe we had more and better options. Because, you can get into Winnemucca, but it's not an easy task, as Wally pointed out. There's some real challenges. And once you get in, you got takeoff minimums coming out.
Yeah, that's a whole new set of problems.
Well, I wouldn't worry about coming out. The problem that I see, if you were to go to Reno, even at full power, you're looking at a 47-minute flight. Your performance once you get to Reno is not going to be in any way better than Winnemucca. You're going to be pretty darn cold at that point. But when the surface temperatures at Reno are actually a little bit colder than they are at Winnemucca.
It's 1 degree difference.
Yeah,
but it's,
well,
it's
Celsius. Still,
but something else to consider, Winnemucca, you're landing now with this windscreen iced up, 7,000-foot runway, and all it's got is a VASI. VOR is on the field, but basically you're going to be making an instrument landing probably out of this. At least Reno, you got approach lights, you got a bigger runway, you've got assistance perhaps on the ground.
Well, you have to balance that against your performance.
Right, right.
And degrading.
Exactly. Chipping me out of the airplane.
Well, at least medical assistance or something so that, who knows if anybody is on even on the ground at Winnemucca. You land the airplane, it's still cold outside. I don't know. I would lean more towards trying for Reno and probably increasing the power as much as possible without some sort of sweet spot. But the other piece that I think would be to get center involved, get ATC involved in talk to them about what the situation is here. Is there a way to get lower? Can you vector me? Maybe the not the MEAs, but as they call it, the MIA, the minimum instrument altitude, even if I got to take a couple of zigzags around some rocks or something, and to have them prepped for when I finally get down there, I want the closest approach, short turn on, expedite onto the ground as fast.
Well, you didn't say it, John, but I mean, why not declare an emergency?
Whether you declare it or not is you could declare it, but the other thing is you need to get those pieces of information or what assistance you do need.
Well, but quite frankly, you cannot tolerate delays.
Right.
The AIM gives us broad latitude, any urgency or distress situation. This is, you're still an hour out from landing and you're already in distress. And in an urgency, and it's only going to get worse, with time. So, I think that gives you a peace of mind. And then you got some help. You got some team, and maybe they're going to, help point out an option or two that you might not have thought about. So getting everybody helping you, because, boy, you're in a situation alone, and some help would be, greatly appreciated, I think, for most of us.
That's a great point. And another part is prepping the cabin for just such an emergency. Pilots, we try to prepare for as many emergencies as possible. You wouldn't think of an inactive cabin heater as being a potential emergency situation, but I think we pretty well decided that it is in this case. So when taking off on a trip like this, we may well want to have our coats in the cabin, have some space blankets or something in the cabin, certainly carry some gloves in your flight bag for your own use. Can't just jump in the airplane like we would jump in a car, because we've got a situation where even under the best of circumstances, it's going to take some time to get on the ground. So it really reminds me anyhow that we have to consider the possibility that we could be environmentally at risk just because of the cabin temperature, and we have to be ready for it.
Yeah, I think that's actually it's a good point in terms of, you know, the things in your flight that could surprise you that cascade into emergencies, right? And is there anything you can do to prevent against that? And then also, I wanted to go back to something you said, John. You talked about trying to find the sweet spot power-wise. I don't know that such a thing exists. You know, granted, this is easy sitting here where you can sit and run lots of calculations, but even at full power, you're only going to shave like 20 minutes off of getting to your destination. It's really tempting to crank up the throttles, and everything else is just in between toughing it out and, you know, and that getting there but having no reserves essentially.
I think, you know, you could argue some you're talking about a difference of cruise power about 20 gallons to get there, full power about 37. Am I going to shave 10 minutes off? That 10 minutes might be the 10 minutes I needed. But the other thing is you're declaring an emergency and you're pretty much committed to landing at Reno one way or another. I'm not too concerned about reserve at that point. I'm going to land there one way or another.
Yeah, and I think you're going to like taking 10 minutes off as you get colder and colder.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
what concerns me. And the frost on the windshield and the side windows is going to get nothing but thicker and more difficult to remove over the next 45 minutes. I really think Winnemucca is the choice here, and, you know, from a balance standpoint.
I can see, you know, the point of getting to Reno and having more services and everything. Again, I stick with what I put out in the response. I'm going for Winnemucca. I'm going to focus all of my attention and resources at the moment into the soonest, you know, most reasonable out that I can do. Even if I have only 100 feet below minimums with the new NOTAM, you know, that's still the approach I want to make before I get so bloody cold and so stressed out getting all the way down to Reno.
What would you say is the total difference between getting on the ground at Winnemucca and getting on the ground at Reno? 15 minutes on the ground from where you are?
I have the chart here.
Oh, go ahead, John.
It worked out. So it's 14 minutes straight in on the VOR approach, 47 minutes full power to Reno, and 54 minutes cruise power.
It's substantially different.
Big difference.
So it's 33. If you went full power, it's 33 minutes longer.
Yes, that's what concerns me. Not only are your fingers going to cease to function, your brain's going to slow down. You're going to be really suffering.
But if it was VFR completely, like I was going to exit the wall of clouds, it was 12,000 feet in Reno, if I don't have to shoot an approach, there's no way I'm going to miss. Then I could see the argument saying, look, you just have to fly there. You'll be out in the clear. Circle down, get your fingers moving again, and you got a VFR landing, and fine. But you combine that with an approach as well that I have to actually fly. Even if it's to, you know, high marginal VFR conditions, boy, I don't like that. I really don't.
I tell you that it's no piece of cake getting into Winnemucca, though. I mean, yeah. You know, with the terrain and the fact that you kind of know you got to get in there, and folks other than Johnny Cash know about Winnemucca, and that's for good reason.
You got a nice up windshield with, as I said earlier, no approach lights, narrow runway. It's not going to be easy.
Can we come up with a sixth option, Jeff?
Boy, I'll tell you, you know, we think about – we play what if on our flights. We say, what if I lose an engine? What if I lose a vacuum pump? What if I lose this? Jeff, you've made me add another what if to my list that I need to consider now for flying in the wintertime, and that is, what if that heater doesn't work?
Well, and the truth of the matter is, heater, no heater, we really absolutely have to ask ourselves about the options we have available, because – stuff does happen, and you could have to divert for any number of reasons. And, you know, heater is one of them, but we all know there's a long list. And if we don't ask ourselves, if here, you know, something goes wrong, what am I going to do, you know, a third of the way, two-thirds of the way, and then on in, you know, you're talking about frostbite and stuff like that that could be, you know, not necessarily life-threatening, but shooting an approach into Winnemucca might be life-threatening. Cold is debilitating. So I think we just have to ask ourselves, I mean, starting back on the ground, you know, what if? What are my options? And I think, quite frankly, this was a case where the pilot unintentionally, by taking off without reviewing options, without asking what if, you know, created a very, very hazardous situation both for he and his family.